So anyway, I'm talking about human rights and households headed in South Africa, and this is a project that I'm working on. And Dr. Allen, who was going to be the moderator, is actually one of the persons in the agency that we're working on this. And so I actually am just really grateful for the opportunity, and also one of my colleagues, Ms. Sinkovic, who may come here, is someone who's helped with this effort at the time. So I just want to go over a little bit about, kind of put this in context of the overall human rights. As you all know, there's a timeline related to relevant significant human rights. You remember there's the 1948 International Bill of Human Rights document that came out of that produced several documents itself, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, as well as something that really we have paid a lot of attention to today, which is the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. This covers both in broadly in international circles, but it's also something that we pay attention to, essentially saying that, you know, there's several rights that every human being needs to have, including health, including social well-being, including political protection, and that sort of thing. There is then, related to our effort, the Declaration on the Rights of the Child, which means the child should be in environments that are care for them, environments that are nurturing and supportive of them, and that we all have an obligation, essentially, to make sure that both them and their caregivers receive the best that they have, which actually then brought us in the Covenants on Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. And this actually is when the Millennium Development Goals actually are linked to that. So we brings us then to the 1990 commitment on elimination of discrimination against women, which is the general recommendation, kind of says here that we avoid discrimination against women in national strategies and in any form of control, particularly when it relates to issues related to disease and prevention, and particularly around AIDS, as well as other chronic conditions. So in 1995, this protocol in relevance to Africa Charter on Human Rights, on the People's Rights and the Rights of Women in Africa. And that's related much to when I talk about our project, I will say a little bit about that. The latter part here is recognition of the whole idea of dignity and equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family. What that really is referring to is that the obligation that we as societies as well as governments have for taking care of those who are citizens within their environments. And then there's the rights to liberty and security of persons, and then the family, you know, which really sort of puts forth that the family is a natural fundamental group and states that families and societies are critical members and that we all really need to make sure that they are well taken care of. And then there is, of course, the provision of the rights and well-being of health and well-being of all. And so, and this includes making sure that there is adequacy related to food, clothing, housing, medical care, and social services. The other general human rights provisions that are relevant to our effort is the special care and protection of motherhood and childhood. And there's a number of initiatives through WHO and other agencies that, and particularly on UNICEF, and this came more a big focus on that, as well as if you look in the Millennium Goals, this is quoted in there. There's a right to education, there's a right to higher standards of both physical and mental health, and then there's the freedom from want, which means that you deal with things like food deserts, et cetera, and then also the freedom to be able to live the life that you and your family and you and your community want to do. So that's what arbitrary interference refers to, and of course, the push, and this is something that is now more universal, even though at times it's still a challenge in certain countries, in parts of Africa, I would say, equal rights of men and women, which is the challenge, actually, to more traditional roles, and, of course, the non-discrimination on any grounds. So the women's right provision has a lot to do with what we do, and I just want to point out one in particular is the fourth bullet, which is mechanisms and accessibility of services of information for rehab against violence of all types, particularly violence against women, and then the last one, which is housing and education related to women. And then here, because of the special privacy we have, we wanted to make sure that you understood that human rights, as it relates to prevention and discrimination of women who might have, who are infected with AIDS, is a critical provision, particularly when you're dealing with couples and you're dealing with children in the family. And this is just a repeat before. So one of the provisions on child rights protection is against cruelty, exploitation, and trafficking. And in Swaziland, the country I'm going to speak about right now, they have just started a major initiative to begin to address this. Matter of fact, we were just there, and they were kicking off this initiative at the level of the, and Swaziland being a monarchy, at the level of the king, and also at the level of the parliament in Swaziland itself. And all of these provisions are part of that initiative ready for children. So what I want to talk about a little bit here is, given that background and given what we have, our project kind of sprung out of the recognition of the group that I'm going to talk to you about, which is the SOHO, and I'll give you that definition in a minute, who actually is an NGO that works in Swaziland. And that NGO itself provides food, clothing, and development services to to child-headed households and to orphans as part of its service. But it also works in with a whole host of other non-governmental and governmental agencies. So the project that we have works in Swaziland, and this is a little bit of demographics in Swaziland that actually challenges what I just spoke to you about human rights, universal issue of human rights, and it challenges it in a sense that these are the realities in which the persons live. The project that we are pulling together and the project that we're working on is to address these issues. So this is a bit of the demographics, and the key one that is relevant to our project is the last one, which just shows you that, you know, this is just how childhood households, you know, are a small but growing group in the country, but in particularly in the two poorest regions, and I'll show you a map of Swazi. So this is Swaziland itself on this, and you can see it's broken up into four regions. Mbane, which is where the red star is the capital of there. Manzini is actually the working hub of the country itself. And then you could see all around it, it's broken up into four different regions. The upper region is rural area, rural poor area. The southern region is the rural poor area. But in the middle, you have the two better off regions. So the majority of the work itself is that. Now, the landmass itself, as you can tell, is really, it's not a really huge country. The unique thing about it, too, is that if you look to the upper right-hand side, you have the country of Mozambique. If you look to the left-hand side, you see South Africa. But what you don't see on the map is you don't see Zimbabwe, which is the other country that borders it. So if you think about this for a second, about the countries that actually borders this small country, it tells you a lot about the challenges that is faced with this population. And besides that, and also the country itself is mostly a rural agrarian country, and it has a small population, which is roughly a little bit under a million people. But they're pretty spread out for the most part, except for in those concentrated areas that are dark areas that you see there. And so the work that we're looking at for this project covers the whole country. So a little about the project. This is a study that we are now in the early development phases of. It is a project what we have is that, unlike a lot of projects, we sort of decide how they're going to do it and then come to the country. Ours is pretty much a bottom-up model. We are taking a community-based participatory approach, but a population-level approach, and do this. So the development of the project has engaged representatives from persons themselves who live there, which means children and families, as well as government and non-government collaboratives. And a lot of these non-government collaboratives have those working with them who are actually from the population itself. So our interaction, even though it's not said there, I did it for brevity, does include the actual persons on the ground who deal with the group. So I just want to make that real clear. So the program itself is our sort of working title, which is improving programming for children's issues. Our initial project itself was just focusing on child-headed households. But what has happened over in terms of this is what happens when you go into that with initial idea after speaking to all the entities, we realized that what we really need to do is look at a project that addresses the issues of households, women, children, and household and families, as it relates to the mitigation of poverty and poor health issues. So basically dealing with the issues that has to do with inequities. So taking care, so addressing inequities as they themselves influence other things like health disparities, like the health and nutrition, like nutrition issues and things like that. So that's what our project is. So broadly speaking, then that's what we're planning to do. And the project itself is building on two projects that were there before. Save the Children or UNICEF did a study of one region, and I showed you that region there where Mbani was in 2009. And from that, they came up with a epidemiological review and analyses of the population itself. So what was recommended by the influences in the working group we have was that to take that as sort of our model, because that was a very well done, very participatory sort of thing. And then to expand on that. And then the other bit was to be engagement. And engagement in the sense of the back and forth. Because right now you have individualized services related to either food or related to clothing or related to those things. And they're like putting out fires. The thing right now is that that's just not working. And they've been there for a while. So the idea was to figure out, can we figure out two things. One is, to what is the efficiency, efficacy of existing services, and if we know, and everybody knows that, you know, what you really need to do is you need to be able to build packages of services, because you need to be able to deal with the whole person, the whole family, the whole community, and that sort of thing. But we don't know what combination of the services. There's like 20 different services provided. Which combination works best? So the first phase of the project, which is going to be our formative work, is going to be the expansion. The second phase is the testing out. Once we learn from the first phase, testing out, comparing the current way services are provided, which is more single services, and then looking at packages of services. So that's what we're trying to do. We believe that by doing that, you will begin to address some of these human rights concerns. You'll be able to improve access to all kinds of services. You will improve cultural improvements, dealing with dignity issues. You'll be able to work on discrimination, because I didn't mention before, but children-headed households is actually sort of considered like a non-entity to some groups. So there's a natural discrimination against that group. So anyway, we thought that we would do this. And so by doing that, there is right now the challenges. You'll be able to address these challenges, which is inadequate collaboration, which is that the population, you know, estimates are primarily based upon existing information. It's just not that good. And in particular, it's difficult to determine what adequate services are there, what's appropriate, and what's comprehensive. The other bit is that you also know that there's widespread poverty. 69% of the population is in poverty. But if you look in the rural areas, there is 27% of that population are actually in what's called an extreme poverty. So you do have this very that. So it's also the HIV rate there is pretty high among pregnant women. It's 41%. Among adults in general, 26%, which is, for a small country, that's a very large, you know, group. And also it affects things like poverty and quality of life. And then services are fragmented, they're inefficient, they're not effective, and it's really not, we don't have a clear understanding of really how these services work. So that's part of what we're trying to do. We know there's no minimal package. We know that there's really no incentives for caregivers. The reality is, and many of you who work in similar countries know that, when you have volunteers, they're mostly women. And so there's inadequacy of involving males in the volunteer service and process. So that's one of the things we hope to get out of this, is a figuring out a way to include whole families, as well as include volunteers that represents both males and females. There's a lack of interventions, and particularly for families, particularly for poor families. We know that there's no adequate information for accessing delivery capacity, and being that we are trying to develop some evidence here, there's no practice-based evidence and in the set of indicators and measures that looks at the outcomes of these services, so whether they have an effect, and then also what kind of services they're being provided. So we have about four different goals to this project. One of them, of course, is to get a handle on what it will take to strengthen services delivery for this population. The second part of it is getting data on sort of how to implement a program. If we're going to do this, we need to get some information on this. So we're information at the planning stage, resource allocation, and then develop a monitoring system there with cooperation of those involved, as well as look at services in terms of design, implementation. And then to come up at the end of the day with a program that we hope will stay in place for a good long time, that is comprehensive, that has a good assessment to it, that can provide data on that can be replicated in other settings. And so we are looking at utilizing both. Those are challenges, but our primary assets. So we're looking at both doing a needs part as well as assets. And assets in this country is phenomenal. There's a number of government, non-governmental programs that already exist. And what we're trying to do is leverage those assets in such a way that they will support this. And they have been at the table, will continue to be at the table, so that we can have a program that everyone can buy into and agree to. And the latter part of what I want to say is just talk a little bit about the agency itself. This is an agency that sort of recognized that there is a challenge to human rights in Swazi. And particularly because of the influence of inequities that exist that influence ability to care for properly and dignifiedly and culturally women and families, and to deal with issues related to childhood households that may be a result of things like HIV, things like violence, etc. And the agency is called SOHO, which is saving orphans and children through health and outreach. And they have a program called Hope Seekers, and this it was founded by Cynthia Prime, and I just want to give you a little bit. I'm hoping I can do this. There is a brief video.
That you are a child, and to the rest of your world.
Can y'all hear this?
In a crowd, you are there but invisible.
Okay, I'm not sure.
You are a casualty of the HIV/AIDS pandemic. Whether or not you have the disease.
I'm trying to turn the volume up. Sorry about that.
You have no value, no voice, no childhood, no life.
My apologies, this is the
family life
being
ruthlessly torn apart in sub-Saharan Africa.
Can y'all hear it now?
24.5 million adults and children.
Yeah, let me do this. Okay, let me start over. Because it's only 3 minutes, so just bear with me.
Imagine that you are a child, and to the rest of your world, you do not exist. In a crowd, you are there but invisible. You are a casualty of the HIV/AIDS pandemic. Whether or not you have the disease, you have no value, no voice, no childhood, no life. The fabric of family life is being ruthlessly torn apart in sub-Saharan Africa. 24.5 million adults and children are living with AIDS. Over 2 million of them die every year. The epidemic has left a growing tide of orphaned and vulnerable children, with a new child becoming an orphan every 14 seconds. With adults aged 18 through 50 dying at an alarming rate, elderly grannies who depended on them for care are now cast in the role of caregiver to dozens of little children. From the rubble of this pandemic has emerged a new phenomenon, child-headed households, where children as young as 8 or 9 years old are being forced into parenting roles at a time when they themselves need to be parented. For these innocents, the clock is ticking. They will either be the new wave of AIDS fatalities, or they will be a new generation of change agents. But too little is known about this population. The Hope Seekers is a coffee table book and a film documentary that will reveal an unforgettable look at the lives of these children. In Swaziland, a small kingdom in southern Africa with the highest AIDS infection rate in the world, there are some 15,000 households led by children. With the numbers of child-headed households growing daily, the country scrambles to put in place support systems to equip the children to fend for themselves. Their lives seem suspended as they cope and hope. Saving orphans through health
This is Miss Prime, by the way.
SOHO, a U.S.-based nonprofit organization with a hub in Indianapolis, is engaging a network of collaborators to raise awareness and to implement a program to help change the future for the children.
Anyway, that's the end of it. So I just want to give you all an introduction. So this is our project. And so this is actually the nice thing about the project is that it's a combination of traditional NGO type services, but at the same time combining that with an actual CBPR research, rigorous research model, which we hope, which we expect will provide the opportunity as a model in many ways to sort of being able to do something that the Millennial Goals calls for, which is actually building evidence. And it gives you a direction on how that service can be and to be able to assess dose response as it relates to service delivery and response and that sort of thing and over time so you can really put something in place. So we hope that, I mean, our expectation is that by coming up with an evidence-based set of packages of services as well as a really good monitoring and evaluation system as well as a broad cooperation that cuts across, you know, government, cuts across royalty, because Swaziland is a country that actually is a monarchy, and that so cuts across non-governmental agencies that work together on this. And because we're building this coalition right off the bat, we're not sort of going to them with a model. We're building the model as part of their input. We suspect that that will be the case. And so we think it will build evidence. We think it will highlight solution-oriented approaches as well as deal with some of the discrimination issues and address exploitation and other things that we know are problems as we address issues related to human rights. And then we really strongly believe in the evidence generation model.